Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
Today we're speaking with Joel Beasley. Joel is an MIT-educated family-first workaholic. Joel loves his canine friends, Ted, Teddy, and Bentley. He has a beautiful wife, Michelle, and has recently welcomed a brand new addition to the family. Welcome, Joel.
What up?
So before we get started, would you just kind of tell us a little bit of backstory for about yourself, just kind of how you got started and kind of what sort of motivates you?
Yeah, for sure. So my father was an engineer. He came out of the Air Force. He was putting the GPS systems into the B-32 stealth bombers in the 80s. Mm. So that's how he got his education. And then he came out of the Air Force, started doing freelance work. And then my mom had two other kids. We have three kids. And she said, take this one with you to work so he doesn't cause any trouble here at the house. So my dad would take me to work with him and give me small tasks to keep me busy. And later I realized he was just, you know, trying to buy himself time to get work done by having me go chase down items in memory and things like that and solder different parts together. And so from there, I got really into technology, wrote code all the way up through high school. After high school, had some successful projects in the real estate space and fitness, and then in accounting and personal financial management. Met some investors, started seeing other people make the same mistakes I was. So I started sharing with them, but there wasn't enough time for me to share all my advice. So I learned about blogging. Well, I knew about blogging, but I learned about like... You write when you can't tell everyone everything all the time. So you can just say, hey, take these collections of writings. If you need them, here you go. So that turned into a blog, which turned into a book. From the book, I wanted to make sure I wouldn't get flamed like publishing nonsense. So I started sending copies of it to different CTOs and from friends, past people I had acquaintance with, and then some just popular CTOs. And they started to write back and we ended up having these phone calls, and that turned into recordings of the phone calls to share on a mailing list. And then someone was like, hey, idiot, it's called a podcast. Like, stop sending me MP3s of your conversations. And so, yeah. So then that's when I learned, you know, that a podcast is more than just an app on the iPhone. And we started a podcast and then it grew really fast. And now we're just sharing and helping people every day. I like it.
So the initial project and book was Modern CTO. You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So those conversations, there was like about 12 recurring conversations. Please don't quiz me on them now. One big one was like spaghetti code MVP epidemic. Everybody was, you know, writing some really bad spaghetti code. And they were making the excuse of, oh, it's an MVP. I can write really bad spaghetti code. And I said, there's only, you know, two reasons why you write bad code. Either you know how to write good code and you choose to write bad code, or you just don't know how to write good code. Yeah. And both of those things suck because they're both fixable, right? If you can learn how to write good code and then just reduce the scope, right? And then have a moderately quality code base that's not spaghetti code crazy. And obviously there's a spectrum of spaghetti code too, right? But like Ben Ornstein's spaghetti code is a lot different than a first time engineer. So
I saw you tweet out that particular quote, or someone else had tweeted out that quote and attributed it to you. And I could not agree more. That sums up my feelings exactly on writing bad code.
Yeah. So that's what the book was. Just a couple, you know, about 12, 15 topics that had come up a lot. And I just shared them. And I also shared my personal stories inside of that. I wrote it like a book that I like the story books. And so I wrote it like that. Tried to keep it short. It's like a 3 or 4 hour read.
Yeah. And you've had a number of notable CTOs on your podcast as well. Are there any particular interviews that you like more than others, or any episodes that you would recommend to others, or ones that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, so recently, I think the NASA episode was pretty cool. That guy was really nice, Douglas Terrier. Microsoft was a cool one. Kevin is great. The interesting thing about the podcast is we've done like 230 or something, but only about 90 have released. So I'm not always exactly sure which ones have been released when I'm having these conversations, because Jake is in charge of that.
So this has sort of turned into a bit of a business for you. This podcast thing is that sort of what I understand?
Yeah, unintentionally. So the original intention was, all right, let's share with people. And then when I realized I was going to be spending money, right? Because I've put just over $250,000 of my own cash into the podcast. So when I realized that it was useful and people liked it, I put my own money into it. And then I realized I had to have some reason to put money into it. So the original reason was, let's share with people. Let's develop a network of really great CTOs, because you're, you know, the average of the five people you spend your most time with, right? It's like, all right, if all I'm doing every day is talking to these great CTOs and then bringing value to the audience, then I'm going to leverage that into a future job, because networking is super important in business, even as a programmer, right? at every stage of the business, it's so important. So I went that was my financial justification for putting the money into it. Then about 4 months into it, a few guests had come on the show and they said, hey, our companies are growing from like 30 to 90 engineers or from 90 to 500 engineers. We hear you talk on our commutes about, you know, exactly with these technology leaders. And how do we take those thoughts and then like transmit them into the brains of our engineering leaders? And I said, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know how we'll do this. But I spent a week thinking about it and whiteboarding it and researching to see if anything else existed, because I refer a lot of stuff. People ask me like, oh, what do you like for API documentation, or what do you like for this or that? And so I'll go look in my tool chest or my gem file or whatever it is, and I'll suggest things. And I couldn't find anything for, you know, leadership and professional development for technologists other than listening to awesome podcasts like this. And so I made a basic version in Ruby, and it essentially just was the delivery mechanism for these video pieces of content that we would do. And then I covered a couple pieces of content, and then we deployed them out to a couple hundred engineers, and they really liked them. So we improved it and gamified it, and it turned into this whole business called LeaderBits. And we essentially are just leadership and professional development for technologists. It's like a paid version. But the difference is interesting though, because like, here's the thing that I found. When we, right now we're having this conversation, and let's say we're talking about like the spaghetti code MVP epidemic, we give some actionable piece of advice, like something good about, you know, implementing it. But the way I consumed content was I'd listen to an Audible book, or, you know, like Managing Humans or Measure What Matters or DevOps Handbook. I'm just reading off my list over here. Like, there's 40 great things in the book, but you don't do anything with it. You just sit there and you're like, oh, that's good, that's good, that's good, that's good. And I figured like for myself, I needed it to be like meal prepped. Like, I want to implement something. It's, you know, Tuesday afternoon. I want to do something. Where's that action that I can take that's simple and short, and that would actually be something a great leader does so we can improve? And I came up with this idea of meal prepping the challenges, and we called them challenges. And yeah, now we deploy them. So LeaderBits is that we deploy these little micro challenges to technologists in the form of this leadership program, and they do the challenges and have community around them. It's kind of cool.
Can you give us a basic rundown or an outline of one of the challenges without divulging too much information, I guess?
Oh yeah. So one's called giving credit, right? So the individual will like recognize a valuable action taken by another team member, and then they'll confront them about it, talk to them about it, you know, express that it was valuable. Then they'll go talk to another team member and bring them in into the loop about it. So just spreading, because if you do that, like, your team's always watching you, right? So you're going to pick up on the behaviors. And so whatever the people are doing, people don't care about what you say, they care about what you do. Like, if you have kids, you know that, right? They just want to mimic you. So we said, why don't we create these actions so that the leaders can do them, and then their team will begin to mimic them. And we report on that. So we have over 70 of them. So we do like one a week. We have over a year's worth. And they're for different levels too. So we have ones for individual contributors, ones for team leads, and ones for C-level technologists. So different challenges, because you can do different things.
So are these activities for people already in that position, or could they also be for people who are aspiring to get to a position?
Yeah, we've got three levels. We've got Lion, Jaguar, and Unicorn. That's why there's a purple unicorn on the video. but the Lion one is for leveling up into leadership, moving into like first-time leadership role. And then the Jaguar is for existing leaders that want to accelerate, and the Unicorn is for C-level people.
What are the biggest challenges that you see in the industry or with people that are looking to make those changes or take on those challenges?
The biggest challenges with people like as they go to level up in their career?
Whether or not they're going to level up in their career or just take a more proactive approach in their career. Because specifically with developers in the industry, there are a number of people that just have a development job and may come in and do a good job, do their task, and then go home. There may be adventurists that like to go to conferences and user groups and take on new and exciting technologies and bring those back to their team. And there might be those that are just looking to take that next step into leadership or something.
Yeah, so here's the biggest takeaway from, I guess, all of these interviews and everything. It's not about intensity, it's about consistency. Hmm. I mean, that's the truth that rings like over and over and over and over and over. The people that have learned to develop a habit and just do it as a continuous habit, improving on their own, just a little bit at a time, every week or every couple of days, just setting aside a few minutes to improve, you know, with or without our leadership program, right? That doesn't have anything to do with it. Just the humans that do that, those are the ones that go ahead. We just made content to help with that. If you have that habit, you will go very far, guaranteed, and you will not see the results immediately. It's like anything. It's like building muscle, saving money, losing weight. It's like anything. You just have to do it consistently for a long period of time and you'll get the results. And it's not sexy, right? It's not fun. It's not montage style from a movie, right? It's none of those things. It is these, you know, sets of semi-boring, repeatable tasks that you continuously execute. And then over time, people go, oh my God, how did you do that? And it's like, yep, I did it just by developing a habit and continuously. And people are already doing it, right? Like you already have habits. You already have these things, these recurring things that you do in your life, and you don't even think about them. And they compound on you every day. So the difference between the success, more successful people and the less successful people that I've talked to is the more successful they are, the more aware of their habits they are. And they better that they align the habit with their goal. So when you have a goal-habit alignment, it's very easy to achieve the goal. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not more complicated than that. And I promise you this. That's the thing. That would be the other thing. Everyone say, oh, it can't be that easy. Yep. It's that easy. The hardest thing in life is persistence, period. To continue to exist, to persist is the most difficult thing in our universe. Everything's popping in and out of existence continuously, even down on the physics level, right? Quantum physics level. It is. Right. And so for you to persist, for you to carry out a vision, and that's a big leadership thing, right? For your leader to bring the team to achieve the vision, for you to continue, for you to develop yourself, for you to get yourself to the next level is the hardest thing because boom, instantly we have thousands of thoughts a day. You're going to be distracted right away. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And so I gave up on trying to focus myself. And instead I only care about one thing, and that's the structure of my habits and the structure of my day.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you're talking about like that a person being the average of the five people, their five friends, or what have you, or would you care to share, you know, the things that have really impacted you and changed you in kind of going through all of these interviews and in networking with all of these people? Is this the piece that has changed you the most, or would you say that there's something else?
Being around them and picking up on them, the first thing is like none of them watch TV. So I dropped that. I sort of create my own world. So If you were to like hang out with me, you would see that, you know, I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I run. So my feet hit the pavement within like 4 minutes of me waking up, earbuds in, Apple earbuds in, blasting the motivational, like, get up and get out of bed stuff by like Jocko or somebody, you know, Jocko. Yeah. He's like, don't really want to get up and get out of bed. I get up and get out of bed. And that's like the first thing that pops in my head in the morning. And I'm like, I got to do it. I got to do it. And so I get up and I'm out the door and I'm on the pavement and I'm like, I'm already out here. Better run. And then, I run, I get back, shower, make breakfast. Oh, like on my run, I flip halfway through music to content, like a Audible book or something I want to consume. If I'm doing like 15 minutes a day of an Audible book, you'd be surprised how many books you can listen to in a year. And then make some notes, eat my breakfast, decide what I want my objective, like my highlight of the day is going to be, right? Of course, today is this podcast, right? So I was like, this is the highlight of my day. And so I decide that. And I spend some time with my family. I work, I'm in the office from 7:30 in the morning till about 5 in the evening. And usually I take like a 30 minute or an hour break to go to the gym because I run in the morning and I lift weights in the afternoon. And then I get home, spend some time with family, and I'm usually in bed by like 8 o'clock, 7 or 8 o'clock. So I get lots of sleep. I get people say, oh, you get up 5:30 and you work 12, 14 hours a day. You don't get any sleep. It's like, no, I actually found out I was getting too much sleep. So 10 hours is too much sleep.
It's interesting that you mentioned podcasts and Audible books. I've been swapping back and forth through a collection of podcasts and then an Audible book and kind of flip-flop back and forth between the two. And you also mentioned the DevOps handbook. I'm actually on my second straight through listen to that book.
Oh yeah.
It's a phenomenal book and really of interest to me in my current role. But like you said, you know, it's difficult to take all of the nuggets out of books like these and create action items. So is that what you're attempting to do with LeaderBits? Is that the types of things that you suggest to people? Because, you know, I'm usually listening on my commute and I've got to cross a bridge and get stuck in traffic and I don't want to pull out a notebook and start writing and risk myself and my safety and other people on the road. So a lot of those thoughts are often lost by the time I get to a safe place to take some notes.
Yeah, that's you want me to give you an example of one of the challenges?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So Dennis is the CTO of Canon. He's like actually senior, he went from CTO to like senior vice president of like Canon, you know, like the imaging camera company. Mm-hmm. So I had him on the show and I say, you know, what's the one thing in your career that you'd accredit your success to? And he's worked in all sorts of departments, mostly in technology. But the gist of it was he continually would go ask his current leader, whoever he was responsible to, the stakeholder, what would make him more valuable? Just the one thing, just give me one thing that would make me more valuable. What could I do to be more valuable to the company, to the team? And then he would take that one thing and he would simply work on it. He would continuously work on it until he developed it. And that would be the only thing he would really focus on in his free time, becoming better at that. And then he would come back and say, this is the results of it, right? He would continually show the byproduct of it. And so the challenge is called instantly become more valuable. And we actually give you the steps. We break it down like 1, 2, 3. You can execute it in 7 minutes. And essentially we tell you, go have this conversation with your leader, ask them this question, come back and write the response. And we call it the reflect DB because like journal or diary sounded kind of lame. So I was like, what would I want? I wouldn't want to make a journal entry or a diary entry, but I'd definitely make an entry into the reflect DB. So then we give like the steps and the question, exactly what to go do. You go do it, boom, you do it in that 7 minutes. It's a 10 minute experience every week. And then we have this thing called Boomerang. You can opt into it so where you get reminded about it, but then you just get the next challenge the next week. And every week you're just doing something that one of these leaders like accredits their entire career to. Hmm. And I figured if you're going to have a habit of improving, that's like the best possible way to do it. You see the video of them, you see them saying this is what their success is credited to. And then you know, Joel comes on the screen and gives you the steps to actually go execute it. And then you do it. And, you know, CTOs, we use it with their direct reports, or VPs of engineering, we use it with their, you know, leader of leaders type people. And then they engage around the response. So like if you were mentoring me, John, then you would see my response to that challenge and you would engage with me. But for advice for people listening right now, like if you actually just you know, you don't have to have leader bits to have that challenge that I just said. Like, actually go do it. This is one of my favorite challenges. Just walk up to your leader and ask them what skill or habit you could form that would make you more valuable. And just let them respond. Usually they're pretty shocked. But as a leader, I'm not familiar. Who's on this in this room right now is a team leader. Like, you lead engineers.
We're all fairly high level senior engineers, team leads, directors.
Cool. So have you ever had an engineer walk up to you and sit you down and ask that question?
No.
Usually they're telling me to go away.
Yeah.
Clayton and I also lead the stpete.net meetup. And oh, cool. I've had a couple of our members that are regular attendees come up and ask, you know, specific advice on their career and you know, how to take next steps. So that's similar, but maybe not exactly what you're referring to.
Yeah, it's something we should be doing, right? And if you're the highest level, right, if you're like a co-founder, CTO, you go to your co-founder partner, or you go directly to the market, your best customers. There's always someone to ask on how you can, you know, what you could do to improve yourself to become more valuable. And it's very important how you ask the question by saying it like that too.
And you've got a development background as well. Is this a path that you would recommend for others, or how did you make the transition from development into CTO?
Yeah. So writing code since 8, and I'm excited because like one of the Leaderbits customers is one of the, I'm not going to mention it yet because we're flying out there, but I'm excited because one of those languages I was programming in, one of those companies is currently purchasing Leaderbits. So that was really cool. And but how I got there was writing code and doing some basic stuff, then PHP for 6-7 years, and then Ruby for seven plus years, and then got into the whole React stuff. Had a development agency, and then when I was having my first child, Aria, I said, should I invest in like an AI startup or what should I do? And I decided that that's really flimsy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, AI is really hot. You got to be able to, like, you have to be really smart where you put your time, because if it's like a 5-year maturity and you misshoot it, right, and you're out of money, or if you think it's going to be popular in 2 years, but it's really 5, you're gone. Like, you're just dead in the water. So I figured what would be resilient would be helping other people and knowing more people. So I got into engineering. I did lots of engineering, got really into becoming a better engineer when I got into Ruby. So I'd say I was a pretty poor engineer for a while. I'll own that one. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question then becomes, did you know it at the time, or did you discover it when you switched?
When I switched languages?
Yeah. It's all like when you entered the Ruby community and saw the things that they were doing, is that when it just dawned on you, like, oh my goodness, I've been terrible? Or did you already think that maybe you weren't doing all the things that you should be doing?
I had there's different people in the Ruby community. So, I mean, keep in mind that like I started, if we're going to say, this would be like 9, 10 years, at least 10 years ago, easily 10 years ago when I started writing Ruby code. And it was just different. They had community. PHP didn't have community. At least however I was floating along in my journey, I didn't come into PHP community. But when I got into Ruby, the resources that were there to teach you to learn, it's like, it would teach you how to do something, but the people were so helpful and nice. It would also teach you about like why you're doing it this way. Mm. And then, you know, with the exception of Stack Overflow, that place is crazy. But the blog post were just unbelievably helpful. Lots of great people out there, and the books were really well written. And yeah, it was when I got into Ruby is when I realized that there was ways to become better. Martin Fowler, I got introduced to Martin Fowler. He doesn't even write his examples in Ruby, right? I think it's like Java or C or something. But he was great. Sandy Metz. There's lots of great people out there.
Yeah, and it's really exciting time to be in software development, because it seems like the communities are really being open and collaborative and welcoming and helping people to be successful.
Yeah, being mean got unpopular, and I was very happy about that.
Yeah. A lot of our listeners are kind of junior or people that are just kind of getting started, what would you say? Do you have some specific advice that you could give to them that would help them kind of get started?
Other than, I mean, direct, the very first thing would be literally to go up and ask about how you can become more valuable. The second thing would be working on your communication skills. So find your medium that you will enjoy. Try them all. You've got audio, video, the mix of the two. And then, of course, you've got writing. So personally, when I wrote my first book, I had no idea how to write. Everything sounded really good in my head, and I would go freeze at the computer and get two sentences out. So I learned how to write by hiring a writer. If you don't have that ability, the 2 minute or the 2 second pull from that, from my experience, would be write with flow. Like, don't stop yourself. Just like keep hitting enter. Don't care about grammar. Just try to like bullet point and outline the framework. Like, don't make it sound good. Just like try to keep your fingers moving the whole time. And who cares if the rant goes anywhere? And then look at what you've done. And then you have to come back. So like, when you write a book, you have to write it like 10 times, essentially, right? You just keep coming back to it day after day with fresh eyes, and eventually it'll mold into something that makes sense. But I'd get really frustrated, and I tried to write a book many times, and I tried to even just write an article. Let's keep it even more simple for a first time person. Like, I tried to write an article about my experience, my blog post, right, with something I did in the programming world. And I would get down about it because it wouldn't come out good, or I couldn't get it out right. So audio recordings, just to say it out loud while you're walking around. I tend to be a real big walk around, speak audio person, and then come back and write it down. Whatever you can do to get that flow, that consciousness where it's just like firing out, it's happening already in your thoughts, but it's like, how do you convert that to paper? That's the goal. It's not necessarily like writing a whole thing. Like, focus on how to get it out of your consciousness stream and into a persistent medium. Yeah, that's what I'd say. Out of your consciousness stream into a persistent medium, audio, written, however you can do it. And then just keep practicing that. And then I'm at the point now where I can write, and my consciousness and my writing have somewhat synced up to the point where it takes me like 2 or 3 revisions to get something out. Like, I wrote an article for Forbes the other day, and it like wasn't that difficult. And so I was like, oh, this is great. It only took like 2 years of doing this all the time.
Excellent. So for people that might be looking to sort of move up in leadership, or move to, you know, becoming a CTO, we already talked about your podcast, Modern CTO, and then obviously the leader bits. Are there any other resources that you might point people towards?
Yeah, it's just a continuous thing of figuring out what people need at the next level. So the valuable thing, what it alludes to, is like, everyone has this imagination, and we don't talk about this much at all as people. So I'm excited to talk about it here. We always have this imagination that we have something we want the person to do. But like, we don't tell them. It reminds me of like my wife, right? She's like, she wants me to do these things, but she doesn't tell me. And she's like, why didn't you do them? I'm like, you didn't communicate. So we always have this imagination. Like, when you're going to go hire someone, you've hired someone before, right?
Yep.
Okay, so when you go to hire someone, you have this mental image of what you need them to be, right? Mm-hmm. You need them to have these skills. You need to have them this style. But they come in and you just start like looking at their history. It's like, it's weird. We do it as humans. There's a lot of work we've got to do. But here's the advantage. Here's the key takeaway. If you're realizing that right now, they're already listening to your podcast, so they already want to improve, which is like step one. Congratulations, you are part of the 1% already just by listening, right? So now take this and leverage it. Now, when you go into an interview, draw out from the interviewer what that mental image is, and then highlight and position yourself, provided you have the skills to do the actual work, right? Highlight and position yourself to fill that mental image, right? Because they may want a more reserved person, and then highlight the more reserved aspects of yourself. Or maybe this pulling out of the interviewer will show you that it's not the right culture for you, right? So you'll learn a lot, but the key takeaway would be pull out their mental image of who they want. And that's your job as the interviewee. And then you take control. This is a leadership thing. You have the control of, am I right for this? Is this something I want? Make it a decision that you're making to work with them, and do that in every aspect. So if you're going to level up in any sense of the word, figure out who is above me that I need to convince to pull me up. Let's just be real here. Like, forget political correctness. Who's above me and who can reach their hand down and pull me up? Focus your time on those people that can pull you up, right? And then figure out what image they have in their head of the people that they should be pulling up, and then highlight those qualities in yourself.
Excellent. If people want to follow you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so at Modern CTO on pretty much every platform.
Okay. And do you have any speaking engagements coming up?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So I'm at Synapse in January, which is in a month or so. It's at the Amalie Arena. It's a Lightning Stadium, mm-hmm. right? And it's got all this innovation that's happening in Florida. So they'll pull in the military stuff from the Air Force Base. They'll pull in all sorts of medical and health technology and science stuff. We've got some pretty cool companies here. And then they just highlight them. And so you get to see all the different innovation, in all the different categories around Florida, and they go there. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm speaking at Synapse, if you just go to moderncto.io, you'll find them. I'm speaking a lot of places this year.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Joel. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Cool.
Joel is an MIT-educated, family-first workaholic. Joel loves his canine friends, Ted, Teddy, and Bentley, and has a beautiful wife, Michelle. Recently, Joel has welcomed a brand new addition to his family.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.